Wow, so we've made it all the way to affirmation 10. And again, if you have any questions or comments, please come by to one of our small groups, or you can email me or call me, or you can call me, email me, or you can find me and we'll have a conversation. I've had a lot of fun with these affirmations, and this one in particular I thought was an excellent conversation to have in our congregation. So I wish this was actually a small group setting where we could have some more back and forth, but don't worry, we're going to do a little of that later, because I feel like this is something that has a lot of questions. One, it's almost like, if this, then that. And so y'all might have a lot of questions in the end more than answers, which, boy, that seems like a lot of our faith journey, more questions than answers. So our Phoenix affirmation today, loving ourselves includes claiming the sacredness of both our minds and our hearts, recognizing that faith and science, doubt and belief, serve the pursuit of truth. And so I'm going to read just a little tiny bit out of the book that has been our guide along the way, the Phoenix Affirmations, A New Vision for the Future of Christianity. We affirm that the path of Jesus is found where Christ's followers value the pursuit of wisdom, which is found at the intersection of head and heart, where God seeks relationship with the human soul. The root word of both mind and heart in biblical Hebrew is L-E-B. I'm not a Hebrew scholar, so I would say leb, but I'm not positive. So it's L-E-B. In biblical Greek, the word for heart, cardia, K-A-R-D-I-A, often stands for mind as well. These simple facts embedded in the very roots of biblical language suggest that engaging both mind and heart is essential in the biblical faith. In our day, rich and lively conversations over the integration of faith and science, doubt, emotion, and belief are not only warranted from a biblical perspective, but they are also an essential part of a mature Christian faith. So that is our beginning. When I was at BU, I had the privilege of going to the Hillel on campus, and a rabbi spoke with our class, and he was really funny and awesome, and we had a really great time. And so we were talking about the Sabbath. And he said that, we were talking about observing the Sabbath, and how did he observe the Sabbath? And he said he turned off his cell phone, which we were like, well, how do you do that? Because you're the rabbi, and you're supposed to, like, take pastoral care calls, but, you're saying you turn off your phone. And so we were questioning him, like, how much do you really put everything aside on the Sabbath? And so he told us a story. There was no answer. There was a story. And the story was this. Say you're driving late one night, how about 1 o'clock in the morning, and there's no one on the road. And so the speed limit, I forgot to push the button. The speed limit says 65. And so, are you driving 65 at 1 o'clock in the morning when there's no one on the road but you? Or are you driving 70? Maybe you're driving 72.5. Maybe you're driving 80. Who knows? Only you know. But are you following the law at 1 a.m. when you're the only one on the road? Are you following the law? Are you driving 65? Or, when I was taught to drive, I was taught, and I don't know if this is right or wrong, but someone said, won't name any names, it's okay if you're a little bit over, 5 miles over or 5 miles below. It's okay. And so the rabbi would call that the spirit of the law. So you're driving around 65, not exactly 65. And so he asked us, do you follow the letter of the law, or do you follow the spirit of the law? And so in this chapter, there were two friends who got together, and they were on two different sides of the belief in creation. One friend, Linda, said that creation was just exactly how it says in the Bible, and the other friend said, well, might be a little bit more to it. And so they had this conversation about creation. And it was a very interesting conversation, and I'd love for you all to read it. If you want to read it, I'll make copies and hand it to you, or I'll email you a copy. It was a great conversation, and instead of having the battle, which we could all have, that fight over who's right and who's wrong, they decided this time to have a real conversation. And they decided to ask questions of one another. Well, okay, so if you believe this, then what do you believe about that, and how does this work here and there? And so they had this really great conversation about the creation story and how the world was created and humanity was created. And it was a wonderful, wonderful conversation of both sides. In the end, it seemed that we are trying to find a definitive answer about God. But yet God is so big, bigger than any of us could ever imagine. There's no way any of us could have a definitive answer about God. No way. And so it seems like we're trying to piece it together by reading the Bible and living in community to find this out, when there's no way we can absolutely know everything until we meet God face to face. And so I have a video for you. And I'm hoping Barbara's just about ready to play that. So what do science and faith conflict? And as you watch this, have that in your head. Do science and faith conflict?
Comfortable. You look like you're about to sleep.
Okay, I will sleep.
I would say preoperatively, he was very motivated and excited about the transplant, but postoperatively, we were incredibly impressed by Zion's positive attitude and his continued motivation to go through therapy. And I think we can see how proud he is of where he's at today.
Music time is over, so it's time to sing goodbye. Goodbye. You know this.
Bye, goodbye.
Sit down here with you. Can I take a look at you? I want to sort of look at his function now. So let's take these off, buddy. To see him, you know, start to hold objects, scratch his nose, shake hands goodbye, his function's far from normal. But in a very short time, he's demonstrating that the tendons and the joints and the muscles that we've attached to these new hands, his brain is communicating with his hands. His brain says for his hands to move, and they move. And that in and of itself is remarkable, because for 6 years of his life, that part of his brain, if you will, was asleep. There were no hands to activate. There was no feedback in any way, shape, or form, visually or from his joints, that he had a hand. Now, let me see that thumb wiggle again. Whoa, that is the best yet.
It's not weird to see him with the hands. It's just like an old feeling coming back, you know? Like if you ever love someone some type of way and then you see him and like, oh, it's rushing back all again. There it is. That's how I feel about his hands. You know, it's like a old feeling. Because it's not weird, because I've seen him with hands, you know? So it just, like all that little gooey stuff you feel for your babies rushing right back in. I just want to hold his hands and touch them and kiss him and love on him. That's what it feels like.
So this boy had an infection, and his hands and his feet were amputated when he was very young, and he had a double hand transplant. And so you saw a little bit of his story. Part of the piece also talks about how the doctor goes to talk to him, and the boy says, I want to write a letter to the family and thank them, because they didn't have to give their boy's hands to me, and they did. And he wanted to thank the family for being so brave and for doing that. And so I ask you, where do you see God in this story? And I'm getting the microphone because we're going to answer. Where do you see God in this story? I know you have an answer. Where do you see God in this story? Yes.
I see God through science.
You see God
through science.
Yeah.
Getting to this, yeah. Where else do we see God? His family, from his family?
The family that gave the hand.
Yes, from the family that gave the hands.
I see God in the elegant design of the nervous system and in the way that people connect, that we can hear each other and the doctor can connect with him and his mom can connect with him.
Absolutely. Where else do we see God?
I say in the little boy's heart.
Mm-hmm. He has such a great attitude about the whole thing.
Through the singing of the little boy with the therapy.
Yes, through the singing. And we have one more. Oh, you have one?
Courage, the little boy.
In the boy's courage, we see God in the little boy's courage. Okay, and do we have one more over there? Okay. Where do we see science in this? Where do we see science in this? Yeah, you got one? All right.
In the hands of the surgeon who was guided by something, but he had the ability to work within the human body and make it whole.
Yeah. Where else do we see science in this? We saw a lot of God. Where else? Oh, the skills? I'll come back to you. Hold on.
The study and the research to be at this point to do these kind of things now.
Yes. Okay. I know we got one more over here. Hold on.
Able to attach the hands.
Yes, the skills of the doctor that were able to attach the hand. And so, in this story, do science and faith conflict? They go beautifully together. So maybe, as we look at all things, even our scripture, we can see how they can work together, how faith and science can work together. Christians can be believers in both science and faith. Just because we believe in God doesn't mean we have lost our minds. I thought you'd laugh a little harder than that. I even wrote it down. So could I see the quote, please? I have a quote for you. One of the greatest tragedies of our time is this impression that has been created that science and religion have to be at war, by Francis Collins. They don't have to be at war, as we saw today. So again, affirmation number 10. Christian love of ourselves includes claiming the sacredness of both our minds and our hearts, recognizing that faith and science, doubt and belief, serve the pursuit of truth. Amen.